Blog Talk Radio.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death construction, in the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning, death and hatred to mankind. Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah. Stops turning, ashes where the body's burning. No more war pigs have the power, and as God has struck the hour. Day of judgment, God is calling. Underneath the war pigs crawling, begging mercies for the sin. Satan laughing spreads his wings. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Everybody, it's Monday night. That means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I'll be your host, Ron Golden. Yeah, you know, Bill, I really like the whole Bourne series. I guess probably most guys, I would assume, go in for that kind of thrill novel, you know. I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there that always imagined or envisioned themselves being some secret agent type, super badass, fighting for the good guys. Yeah, they are good. Glad to have everybody with us. Our good friends, Mr. Bill Strong, Mr. Rod Luke, Brian from Mortgage Auditing Service. And of course, I can't leave out FT and Miss Linda Sills. Just great to see everybody. Looks like we've got a guest that's listening in as well. You know, has anybody been paying attention to what's going on in the financial markets? Probably not. You know, we've got some great information. I put a link up in the chat earlier. I'm going to put another one up here. And just to give you an idea of, you know, some of the things that we've got going on. That chart that you're looking at, and you can pull it up and just look at it briefly, and you see where it shows highest welfare cliff. And what they're showing in that dark yellow color is that a single mother who makes $29,000 a year gross, after all available benefits and kickbacks from the government, her net income after taxes, I say that tongue-in-cheek, would be $57,327. The same woman making a gross salary of $69,000 a year would only net $57,045. So it really pays to be on the government payroll. And I mean, don't we all recognize by now that if you're working in the private sector, you are truly a government employee. Whether you believe that you are or not doesn't really matter. I mean, there are all types of government benefits programs out there. We've talked about this briefly before, in what is called covered employment. Things like, you know, workers' compensation, who could argue with that, or unemployment. Certainly the 99ers would not argue with unemployment. And I wasn't really looking to pick a fight, per se, based on the government benefits programs that we are forced to participate in if we work in the private sector under quote-unquote covered employment. But those are costs, nonetheless, to employers. And I understand quite clearly the problem that we have in this country with large multinational corporations. Okay? I get that. I understand that. But let me tell you something. These programs that were put into place work to the benefit of large multinational corporations and to the detriment of the small individual business owners, because it increases the cost of doing business for these people. And it's a cost of doing business that the small business owner, the mom and pop types, cannot easily pass along. I don't want to get in a peeing match about, you know, capitalism or free market. This is hardly what you could call free market. And of course, I would never argue and could not argue that these programs have not been beneficial to some people. And they certainly have. Even though they're run at the state level, many of them, they're done through block grants with the states, and the states have trust funds or investment funds. They invest these funds. These are some of the things we look at when we look at the comprehensive annual financial reports. It's just another way of government spreading its sphere of influence into places that government has no business being. Congress was supposed to regulate commerce, that is, to make regular the regulations and the crap that they're imposing on the average guy trying to start a business in the United States is ridiculous. It was never intended to evolve into the system that we currently have. But there's something in this chart. Yes, I heard that this evening, Linda, one of the congressmen putting forth legislation to repeal the War Powers Act. Good luck with that. But if you click on that, the economic collapse blog, labor force participation rate, and look at that chart, obviously it's horrible that, you know, the numbers have plummeted to just over 63 million, or 63%, I beg your pardon. But I want you to take notice of this chart and you see where the peak was, and you see the little shaded gray area. See, these shaded gray areas indicate some kind of event economically in the United States. And you'll notice that one shaded event there coincides with 2001. And, of course, they don't have the exact date down there, but I can assure you that it coincides with September 11th, 2001. And you ought to notice a trend from that point to the last entry on the red jagged line, which would have been in 2013 when this chart was compiled. And that trend is a downward trend. And it's a downward trend and has been a downward trend since 2001, September 11th, 2001. Now, in some areas of our existence, that downturn wasn't totally obvious. For whatever reason, I can tell you that in my business, it has been painfully obvious. I have watched the downward spiral of the economy. I've had a front row seat in my business. My wife's business, they have been booming. Ours has not. And my business, I see more average Joe retail customers than my wife does. And I don't even have to ask them how their finances are doing. They tell me. And they're not happy about it. And this has been a downward spiral since 2001. What's going on today to try and divorce the antics of today from 2001, 9/11, is foolhardy. It's foolish. If you don't believe that there is a direct connection, a link, then you haven't been paying attention. And to downplay 9/11 as if there were not a link to 1991, when we invaded Saddam Hussein in Iraq, you again have not been paying attention. And if you go back further and you don't believe that 1991 and our invasion of Iraq is not directly and inexorably tied to 1979 and our involvement in Iran, you haven't been paying attention. We were training these people in Iran against the Iranian regime, and more specifically against the Soviets, the evil, wicked Russians. You remember those guys. And it blew up in our face, didn't it? And here we are again, advocating the same old, tired thing in Syria. You know, the main thing that I see different now from, hell, we can go from 1979, you want to go back to 1953? What were we involved in 1953? Well, we were involved in the overthrow of Mossadegh. We were also involved in this little thing over in the Korean area over there. Was it the Korean War? Didn't they call you? Remember the Frozen Chosen? You guys remember hearing about that? I had an uncle that served there. Let's go back a little bit further, 1948, the creation of the nation state of Israel. Right smack in the Middle East, what they, you know, the result, my God, the culmination, ladies and gentlemen, of all the hard work that the U.S. and the Allies had put in the First World War, now culminating with the end of the Second World War and the Red Line Agreement that they had worked so diligently to bring to fruition, brings about the creation of the nation-state of Israel, who's always a useful scapegoat when we want to whip one of these Muslim stepchildren into line. You know, there's always Israel in the middle of that. Always good fodder over there. Always a good excuse. There's never a shortage of excuses, ladies and gentlemen, and has not been. There has not been a shortage of excuses for us to be engaged in murdering people in the Middle East since 1948. There has not. We've called it many things. It was, of course, our patriotic duty to strike out at these evil bastards. And evil bastards, I believe they are. Not all of them. Not every person in the Middle East is an evil person. Not all of them are bastards either. But who raised up and has encouraged this ideology? We've known for decades. I can remember hearing my parents voicing their frustration and anger that our government never seemed to hold Saudi Arabia accountable for anything. And of course, we know why that is, right? I mean, we know about the petrodollar now. That's not something new. It's kind of obvious. And what's even more obvious is how completely thin and horribly, horribly handled this debacle has been over Syria. I mean, Libya was a mess. I mean, there can be little doubt. Was there any doubt in anyone's mind that the sole purpose in Libya was to see Gaddafi dead? Now, we can call that regime change. That's what we called it in Iraq, right? Everybody was going to throw flowers at us once they hung Saddam Hussein. But you see, this regime change is kind of ironic because, you know, unlike the Nuremberg trials, right, where you had all the Nazis on trial because they were just following orders. Well, you see, we learned a few lessons there, didn't we? So we don't have the blood on our hands. We send, you know, God, how could we possibly know that the newly formed government in Iraq was going to try Saddam Hussein and hang him? We had no hand in that. We didn't murder Saddam Hussein. Oh no, that was a newly democratically elected government in Iraq, and that was called justice, you see. And after all, who can blame them if the stories are true that we heard, all the horrific stories about Saddam Hussein coming out of Iraq, you know, throwing people into meat grinders. I have no doubt that he was a sadistic, evil bastard, you know. So tough to feel sorry for a Saddam Hussein swinging at the end of the rope. However, we didn't have anything to do with that. Oh no, we didn't do that. And you know, we didn't have anything to do with Gaddafi being murdered by those poor rebel freedom fighters that were, after all, just trying to fight to free their country from the tyranny. Such a crazy guy. But let us not forget now that, you know, Gaddafi, he was no dummy, he was no slouch. and he had actually agreed to give up his chemical weapons a long time ago, and I'm sure that he is perfectly happy that he had done so now. You know? I mean, let's look at the message that sends to others. But this folly, this Keystone Cops approach that I've seen in particular with John Kerry. What a pompous prick bastard he is. Pardon me for not being more humble and loving of my fellow man, but he's just a jackass. And I don't know how many of you actually saw or heard or read about his continued missteps. Oh, he misspoke. Oh, he talked out of turn. He went off the talking points on that one. He went off teleprompter when he got... They're boxed into a corner, ladies and gentlemen, with this crap about Assad handing over his chemical weapons. He got boxed into that corner, and now suddenly the Soviets spring up and say, hey, look. Hey, look here. You know, we want to offer Assad to hand over his chemical weapons, and we'll take them into custody and make sure that they're under international supervision. And now the White House said, well, that doesn't change anything, really. We didn't really mean that if he turned over all of his chemical weapons that that would dramatically change the face of what's going on. No. No, you misunderstood our statement. And we never said that there was a red line either. You know, this whole red line business has just gotten completely out of hand. Okay, we didn't really say what you think you heard us say. But hey, why should that be any different than any other administration? I mean, let's not forget that, you know, we have absolute evidence that the regime has weapons of mass destruction, including chemical and possibly nuclear weapons. We know that we found aluminum tubing from Niger that was used to contain yellow cake. And, you know, we had great intelligence, rock solid, that these were mobile biological sites where they were, you know, concocting the next swine flu. And then, of course, we had, you know, well, there's some over here, and there's some over here, and here, and here. And, of course, nobody in the media, and damn sure nobody on television watching, has the foggiest idea what they're pointing out. And it, you know, it could have been the CDC in downtown Atlanta, for all they know. And, of course, we know the media has been caught numerous times, in particular CNN, blowing smoke up our tailpipe and telling us that our backsides are on fire. So anyway, what a mess. What an absolute mess. And now, after all of the rhetoric and all of the posturing and all of the lies, it's come out, well, now perhaps regime change is the only way to really affect, you know, lasting peace and democracy. Let's not forget that we want to promote democracy all around the world, right? I mean, isn't that the whole idea? Democracy? Isn't that what we're supposed to be here in the good old U.S. of A.? A democracy. I seem to remember reading that right here in my pocket constitution. Let's get that preamble out again because I know it's in there. I read it. It starts out like, we the people, in order to form a perfect democracy... Oh, yeah, here it is. It's right here. I knew it was in here. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect democracy, establish democracy throughout the world, and ensure democratic tranquility, provide for the common democracy, and promote the general democracy, and secure the blessings of democracy to ourselves and every other continent on the globe, do hereby establish and ordain this Constitution for the United States of America. That's exactly what it says. I cannot believe that you guys have not read, I mean, do you have a different pocket Constitution than the one I have? Because that's clearly what it says here. I'm dumbfounded if you think that I'm incorrect. But, you know, I can read English pretty well and I comprehend it quite well. And that's exactly what it says here. This, it's all about democracy, guys. And, you know, let's not forget that we have an obligation to promote democracy in the world. Even if they don't want it, and hey, just our little secret, don't tell anybody, but, you know, sometimes, you know, like Ronald Reagan said, these folks over in the Middle East, they can be kind of unreasonable, but that's okay, you know, because it's for their own good, and we know that, so just don't worry, you know, we'll weed out the radicals, and, you know, that's really what we're trying to do, is weed out the radicals like Bashar Assad, you know, Gaddafi. I mean, these people are clearly unstable. They don't even want to talk about the word democracy in their country. They are tyrannical dictators. And, you know, if we have to kill a few million camel riders, I mean, their lives were going to be spent under a terrible tyrannical dictator anyway. So, you know, we probably did some of them a favor by knocking them off, and at least they'll die quickly in the bright flash when we hit them, you know. It'll be okay. Because really, we're promoting democracy around the world. And who doesn't embrace democracy? You know, just because you might have to enforce it at gunpoint, you know, there's always going to be those people out there that just don't understand how fundamental democracy is for peace, world peace, and I mean true world peace, a lasting world peace where, you know, nations don't kill their citizens anymore like Hitler or Stalin did. You know, once we have a global democracy, then, you know, all the killing, well, the mass killing, will be over with. I mean, we'll come to an end. See, because once we've killed off all the, once the wars stop, and we know that wars are the fertile grounds of these radicals, these radical rebels that try to lie, you know, they don't want to promote democracy, these radicals. They want a dictatorship. And, you know, one of the fundamental problems with these anti-democracy types is that they're also fundamentally, they're what we call religious fundamentalists. You know, I know a lot of people have talked about Islam, and Islam really is a religion of peace. It's just the radicals, the radical fundamentalists. And it's really, see, it's just a problem with these really super radical fundamentalists within these religions. And so, you know, eventually we're going to have to come to the realization, ladies and gentlemen, that religion really is at the root of all this fanaticism and all these problems. And, you know, once we've rooted out all the brutal dictators, then we can begin to work on, you know, shaping religion so that we don't have all these radical fanatics within religion that are such a threat to peace and democracy worldwide. And it truly is a global threat. You know, the war front has changed. We can no longer do things the way that we used to do. You know, those are old, tired solutions. that we can no longer look at as a viable option. We have to look at global solutions because, quite frankly, the problem is global. I mean, look at religion today. Religion is a global problem in the world. And the two largest sects of religion in the world are Christian and radical Islam. Now, granted, there are a lot of traditional Muslims out there that don't adhere to this radicalized version of Islam. And, you know, it's becoming increasingly more evident that as long as the Vatican is still functioning, that and as long as the Baptists, the Southern Baptist organizations are still intact, and as long as the Episcopalian Church is still largely organized, and you know some of the Orthodox Christian and even the Pentecostal and the Methodist, as long as we remain divided and we have these fanatical entities within religion, ladies and gentlemen, it's very clear that there will never be peace, not a true lasting peace like what we need in our global community. And with the advent of technology, you know, the world really is a much smaller place these days, don't you think? We're really just a global community. And so I think we need to move forward towards maybe getting rid of some of these really stringent religious ideologies. Work towards, you know, if we're going to have a religion, let's... Yes, it does, Linda, that's a very good point. It does take a village. And, you know, it's even the great Jesus in the New Testament, you know, he would agree that you have to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And until we can get to that point, ladies and gentlemen, true peace, true democracy is just not going to be possible. And I really don't believe that, you know, there's any way possible that many of these, and I know that there are not all Christians are bad. I understand that. But we do see huge groups of radicals. I mean, just look at these Westboro Baptist people. Can you imagine those people ever actually embracing and loving a Muslim as a fellow neighbor, as a fellow human being, or even a Mormon or a Jew? For God's sakes, probably not them either. So as long as there are these radical Christian groups that continue to try to use the Bible as a weapon against people, we can never truly have a global democracy. We'll never be that quaint global village. And you know, every village needs an idiot, so maybe we can re-elect George Bush for a third term. What do you think? That might work out pretty good. I mean, seriously, guys, look around at what the hell is going on. Have you been paying attention? Yes, I know it's satire, but only just barely tongue-in-cheek. And, of course, my telephone's going to ring. Hello? Probably someone really important, like an 800 number. I bet they want to sell me some... But you know what? That might be the freaking NSA. Let me answer it just right quick, because it really could be. Let's see who it is. Maybe we can have some fun. Hello? No, thank you. Well, gee, must have been the wrong number. Oh, man. You know, have you guys, there's some great skits out there on the 800 numbers. And then the guy calling and the rocket coming through the window and blowing him up. That's a pretty good skit. Well, I'm glad you guys suffered through that first half-hour continuous rant that I had going there. That was almost impressive. Half-hour, heck, it was almost 40 minutes long. That was pretty good. So anyway, if anybody wants to call in, you know the number. Miss Linda put it up there just a few seconds ago. But it's 646-378-0321. 646-378-0321. Call in, let us know what's on your mind. What are you guys thinking? What's going on in your lives today? If you've got comments about the Syria or thing going on right now, or financial markets, or you know, maybe you got a new car, who knows? Heck, I'm game for anything today. Call in and give us a shout. Let us know what's on your minds. And I was just telling the folks in the chat room before I came on the air that I read a really cool book today called The Beginning of the End. And the name of the author escapes me at the moment. And I was really surprised because it's a fictional book. And that's not something that I typically read. I typically do not read fiction. Michael Snyder is the name of the writer. The Beginning of the End. And I picked this up this morning on my iPad for a mere $3.99, which I thought was a great deal. And, you know, wouldn't you know it, somehow or another, and I hope my boss isn't listening, I read the whole damn thing today. We weren't really that busy, but it was right at 87 chapters. I can't tell you how many pages. It wasn't a gigantic book. It wasn't Atlas Shrugged by any stretch, but it was big enough. And I finished it at about 6:30. It was a very, very cool book. And just kind of like an action series, but more to do with current goings on. The book was about an economic collapse, the end of the dollar hegemony around the world, the financial system collapsing here in the U.S. And it was just a very good book. And I have a savior calling in, Miss Linda from California. Miss Linda, how are you today?
Fine, how are you? Hello to everybody in the chat room. I'm glad you've got a great audience. You get tired of seeing the clowns, like, you know, that rich boy married into Heinz Kerry, you know, just lying through his teeth. And he's such a flip-flopper. The guy was, you know, what was he, close to being a treason guy back in the day? I mean...
I don't know. I there were a lot of stories. The Swift Boat stories. Mike Church had a great parody song for John Kerry today. I laughed out loud very hard, probably more than I have in quite a while. Yes, Miss Yola, I am a bit bored tonight, but you know, this book was it was just awesome.
Good. Sounds awesome with all that stuff. I mean, like everything that's going on today. And you know, you have to, and you know these guys are just playing, except they're playing real war games like war pigs, and they've got the Mediterranean filled with ships. But what are they doing? I mean, are eighth graders playing?
I just haven't figured out if this is truly a sincere tussle between the BRICS. The head of the BRICS boys and
right.
the head of the Fed boys, or if this is just all part of the theater. I don't know. I really don't. And, you know, the more that goes on, the less you can find credible to believe about any of them.
I know. And, you know, the one thing I'm noticing is that more and more people, the average Americans around, are not buying into this. They're just not believing one word out of anybody's mouth out there. I saw the pictures that was on Facebook. There was like, I don't know how many is actually going to be there because no one's counted them, but was supposed to be 1 to 2 million bikers, and it looked like a heck of a lot of them going to D.C. So who knows what's going to happen. But
and let's not forget, aren't they supposed to be, well, let's see, today's the 9th, tomorrow's the 10th.
Yeah.
Wednesday's going to be the million Muslim march on D.C., right, on 9/11?
Yeah. Yeah, how many do you think is going to show up? Yeah. How many of those Muslims?
I could hope for a million.
They're going to be outnumbered. They're going to be outnumbered. Believe, well, even if they get that, I bet they won't get 500,000. I bet you they don't even get half a mil.
Honest to God, but can you imagine? Could you imagine for about a half a second a million bikers and a million Muslims and a million Tea Party folks all converging on D.C. at the same time? That could get a little hairy. That could get quite hairy.
Yeah. I heard that there was a couple guys that were planning on going and joining the bikers and bringing their Coleman stoves and frying bacon. Lots of it.
I mean, you know, I don't want to see anybody get hurt. I really don't.
I'm afraid
that, you know, there's it's not going to take much to set off the powder keg these days.
Oh my God, not at all. That's what.
And you know, this financial data, I just keep looking at it and I'm shaking my head and I'm like, I do not. Well, I do. I was gonna say, I do not understand how these talking head numbnuts can get on the TV with a straight face every day and pretend like there's nothing wrong and everything's great and the economy's improving. But I do know how, because they get paid a damn good bit of money to say those things. But the data just absolutely flies in the face of all the crap that they're putting out on television. Oh, yeah, you know, unemployment fell to its lowest level since 1978. Right. No, though, wait, that was labor participation. Sorry. Hold on. Let me get that chart back up. Oh, yeah, unemployment's down to 6.3%. Horse crap. How do you get to that when it's actually 7.3%? But the way you get to that
is
half a million people out of the job, out of the equation.
Yeah, and then you've got all these people screaming about, the libtards screaming about, oh, if they try to defund Obamacare, it's going to shut down the government, which is a bunch of lies. And then one of the guys today on the local talk show host was talking about Obamacare and all these lies that have come out in the very beginning when they were trying to sell it back in 2009, and talking about, oh, it's supposed to ensure this, you know, 31 million more people, and now the new CBO numbers, we're going to drop 25 million, anyone who can't afford it is going to get subsidized. Where the hell is that money? I mean, then none of this makes sense. It's nuts.
This is the thing that drives me insane. And I was talking with someone else about it, last week and the week before. And the thing is that all of these programs, and that's why I was talking about all the great federal benefits welfare programs like workman's comp and unemployment insurance and welfare and you know, food stamps and
food
SNAP
stamps
and WIC and all these other programs, right? And I guess, you know, the prevailing conventional wisdom is, look at all the people these programs help. And if that's all it was, okay, if that's all you were going to look at, if you were just going to look at it in a box under a microscope and say, oh, look at all the people being helped. Yes, people are receiving assistance. And if that's all there was to it, great.
But, yeah, right.
But you're only looking at the glass half full, and you're not looking at what it's half full of. And what you don't see are the unintended consequences of other charitable sources that used to be there drying up, and these people becoming more and more dependent upon their government.
Sure.
That was the chart I was showing earlier. A single mother earning $29,000 a year takes home a net in benefits and freebies and her salary, $57,475. That same single mother making $69,000 a year takes home less. net, on the net, than the one making $29,000. So the message we send to our society, those poor
right.
people that the liberals always claim to be wanting to help out, is that it's best if you just shut up and stay poor, because you'll get more
bennies.
Yeah.
Well, plus
and,
the fact,
you know,
I mean,
people don't believe that, and they roll their eyes, and they say, oh, that's a bunch of crap. But no, it is not a bunch of crap. It is a disincentivization to climb the ladder. It is
exactly. And you know what they've done by doing all of this progressive socialist, you know, economic meddling and corporate fascism, is they closed the door on everybody. They did it a long time ago. You know,
they closed the door. Quite honestly, they closed the door back in 1860s.
I agree. Absolutely. I absolutely agree.
They closed the door when Lincoln nationalized banking. That was the beginning of the end. Now, granted, it took a while for the bankers to get their hands in our pockets. I mean, let's see, the war ended in 1865. Lincoln was assassinated in 1867. You had the Reconstruction Act and the first Civil Rights Act. And then the 1870s, you had the railroad boom that was all being financed by all that wonderful corporatism that Lincoln had envisioned as such a great thing. That led to the property boom, the real estate bubble, the railroad bubble, and finally collapsed the economy, not once, not twice, three, four times. I mean, it was just snowballing. But it wasn't until we had that massive influx of money into the central government. And I want people to recognize that, because at the same time, you know, if we go back, there are a lot of people out there that would advocate for returning the power of money over to Congress, which would alleviate the interest, okay, the perpetual compounding interest on that money. But it damn sure doesn't remove the corruption. So the one begat the other, okay? It was the nationalizing of the banking system under Lincoln and his British mercantilism model that drew all that cash into Washington, D.C. and created the behemoth that we have today.
My God. You know, it harkens me back to also, I saw one show yesterday. It was only an hour. It was on Fox. It was John Stossel, and he does a few good things. He had this huge audience filled with libertarians, and he had people like Steve Forbes and others, historians, and people who were talking about comparing the fall of Rome to what's going on in our government today. It was pretty eerie. The debasing of the coinage, the, you know, the bread and circuses, the welfare, all of it, absolutely, unbelievably parallel as to what they did, and the thing is that we're not that far gone, but we're, you know what I mean, we're close.
Oh, I don't know about all that. We're one or two moves away from the BRICS nations.
We're close.
If they really don't have the
lions yet in the cages of the fighting Ultimate Fighting Championships yet.
I wouldn't be not literally but figuratively. I think we do. I mean, if you look at the ridiculous, we have more people per capita in prison than any other country in the world, and that is the face of your freedom, your democracy, ladies and gentlemen. We have more people per capita incarcerated than Stalin did, for God's sakes. Of course,
he just shot them.
I was going to say, in his defense, he did kill a lot of them. So, but, you know, we do that too, just in a different way. Just like I talked about, you know, when they talk about the ghost cities over in China, well, we have that here too. It's just a little more spread out across the country. It's not all concentrated in one particular area.
Right. Well, they're doing that.
Some people do. Beasley said some people belong in jail, don't they? Oh, absolutely. There are a lot of people that belong in jail. Absolutely.
And
I think there's quite a few of them in Washington, D.C.
Yeah,
we
got
to wreck some
live.
Bars all the way around that damn place. But, no, that's not to diminish that there are criminals out there, most certainly. But I'm telling you, there are quite a few criminals that destroy more lives and have a grander, more vast impact, not just here in the U.S., but globally, that are walking around in $4,000 Armani suits,
yep,
wearing ties and being chauffeured around town. And FT, you're exactly right. Bankers, cough, cough. And investment brokers and the like, there are a lot of them. And they're scumbags, just like John Corzine. You know, that's one. And there are many others. Gee, a couple of them are in this administration. Let me think. Tim Geithner, Robert Rubin. Those are a couple that come to mind pretty quickly. And these people have no qualms about destroying thousands of lives, financially,
like billions,
or otherwise. They don't care. They don't give a damn.
It's
but yes,
very
there
criminal.
Are those people,
yeah.
There are people that actually belong in jail. There are true criminals out there that should be in jail. There are a lot of people that have done nothing other than grow a tomato plant in their backyard that their government has deemed to be evil.
Right.
Only it's not a tomato plant. It's marijuana. But now that we see the current administration softening on that, which, you know, I guess maybe that's another effort to gain some popularity. You know, I don't know. I don't have a dog in that fight, so to speak. I don't smoke it, don't sell it, don't grow it, don't need it, don't want it. But that's okay. Those that do, I got no qualms with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing I was thinking about, because the other clip that I saw, and it was on Facebook within the last 24 hours, was Ron Paul speaking when he was actually talking to Ben Bernanke and asked him point blank. He says, "Is gold money?" And Bernanke looks at him like he was half drugged and said, "No."
No.
It was like unbelievable.
It's a relic mostly, and that's when Ron Paul asked him, "Well, why do central banks hold it?" "Well, I don't know. Tradition mainly." He's like, really? Tradition? It couldn't be that it's actually written into the law, right? Into the Federal Reserve Act,
you know,
that, you know, they have
guys,
to hold collateral in either gold or treasury
these
bonds.
These guys that are up there, man. But, and I do believe that good old Helicopter Ben owns one of those $4,000 suits, or many, many. But I have this feeling, because of who they are and what they do know and what they do, they are so disingenuous when they open their mouths. It doesn't matter whether they're talking to him or whether they're under oath. They just make me sick.
You know,
I'm done with
look, the whole look. One thing you got to understand: that whole mess of idiots up in Washington D.C., and I mean just damn near every single person in that entire 1 mile square or 10 mile square, whatever the hell it is. It ought to be one inch square. But I'm telling you, probably a full 90% of the people up there don't know a damn thing about the world outside of that 10-mile square.
Oh, I
know. And they damn sure don't give a damn about you or anyone else. They're a bunch of narcissistic, insecure narcissism.
I caught it, yeah.
I mean, they're total insecurity, but they're narcissists at the same time, which is a bad combination. And they don't give a damn about you. They have no clue how the real world actually works outside of their little bubble. And they don't want one.
They do like their mirrors and their vanity. Like I said earlier, I didn't know whether it was Pelosi or Kerry who had the most faceless. Unbelievable. But
I've got another caller I want to pick up, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
The independent libertarian. How are you, sir?
But you know it's me, Ron.
I know it is. I know who it is.
But thank you for, Linda, thank you for the independent libertarian introduction. Because isn't it interesting how libertarianism is taking over? Which
sure
was just
is.
A matter of time. But I tell you, getting back to you know, not trusting the government. Now, we're at a point where it doesn't even matter what they tell us. It's a lie, even if it's the truth.
Exactly.
It's over.
The credibility, you know, any credibility John Kerry may have had just got shot in the ass in the last 2 days. I mean, It's like the Keystone Cops. It truly is.
And, well, you know what it also reminds me of?
You know, I have to believe. Can you really be that freaking inept?
Yeah, they can. Here's why they're getting caught, though.
They're getting caught because of alternative media. And I'll submit this to you. If we had all we had 12 years ago, basically was Alex Jones. And Alex Jones was seen as a very crazy person. If we had the alternative media 12 years ago that we have today, 9/11, the lid would have been blown off of that the way it's been blown off of Fast and Furious, Benghazi, and now Syria. There is no question there would have been an absolute explosion.
Sure.
If we had what we have now 12 years ago. That's what I think.
Well, I think it's over for the NWO,
and it makes them more dangerous because they've been had now. They've been had. I mean, you really have to be under a rock now to not see. No, you have to. You really have to be embedded in a deep coma to not see the NWO is real now.
Well, you have to accept now. You could be in Plato's cave, you know, which I believe.
Yeah, or.
I believe that it might actually be in the tomb up there at Skull and Bones at Yale. So, I mean, you know, I had to throw that out for Beasley.
Not to demean people who are born with difficulties with like retardation, but I swear, I feel sorry for those folks. But the ones in D.C., I think they just I don't know what they do. They must take stupid pills. I don't know what they do. I can't believe you're right. They live in Washington D.C.'s 10 square mile radius Plato's Cave. It's disgusting, and they've cried wolf so many times that there is no way that anyone's going to believe them, even if it was screaming truth. I mean, this is what they've done to themselves.
You know, and I would encourage anybody, even though I hate to give guys like that money, but I know he's been on Fox and some of the others. But Leibovitz, the guy that wrote the book This Town, when you read it, you just want to throw it against the wall. You throw it at your TV or, you know, because it's. I have no doubt that everything that he put in that book is absolutely 100% accurate. And he even, you know, he fesses up to his part in the facade, the charade that's played.
Mm-hmm.
But honest to God, it's like every person in that town is a damn weather vane. Okay? And
well,
any way the wind blows, but it's only momentary. Okay? It's only momentary. Every one of these guys reinvents themselves within a week or two. One of the guys he was talking about was Daryl Issa's little buddy in his office, right?
Right.
And this kid had such an ego, and he spoke out of turn, and he caused a little grief for Issa. And everybody thought he was going to be fired, but he wasn't fired because Issa just really liked this kid for whatever reason. And then, you know, 3 months later, he really stepped in it big. He was bragging. He was sending copies of emails to the Leibovitz, the guy that's writing the book, right? Of what should have been privileged emails from other reporters and inside stuff. None of it was anything juicy. None of it was anything worth a crap, right?
Right.
It was all just ho-hum stuff. But he was bragging to the other, what they call flacks, right? The other flunkies that work within the offices, mm-hmm. you know, their staffs. He was bragging. He said, oh, yeah, I send emails to this journalist. He's writing a book. Well, it got his ass fired.
Wow.
And so you'd think, you know, okay, well, there that is. He just lost a six-figure job. Well, not quite six figures. He was making $95,000 a year as a little flunky intern with ISA.
Not bad.
Well, 2 weeks later, he's working at some other gig, and a month later, ISA's got him back in his office, rehired him, and he said, well, I believe everyone deserves a second chance. And nobody thought twice about it. And the irony of it was is that he had inadvertently stirred up an old story about Daryl Issa. And I don't know what you know about Issa, but Daryl Issa is the wealthiest member of Congress.
Right.
He himself. He has 16 patents to his name. And Issa, ironically, he started Viper car alarms. That was one of the things that
right.
he invented. But now back in the 70s, him and his brother got popped for stealing cars.
Oh, geez.
They were never convicted. They never prosecuted them. And he always claimed that it was all his brother and it was guilt by association and he's pure as the driven snow. But the
yeah.
irony is kind of there, you know, that here's this guy that made millions, billions in
sure.
car alarms,
he
and he was popped for car theft back in the 70s. And I'll bring in another caller. I believe I know who this is. Skype caller, how are you, sir? Or madam?
It's not a Skype number that I'm calling from. No, I have blocked where my number doesn't appear. Apparently it appears as a Skype number. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Good evening.
You know, I listen to you talk and you speak good common sense, and I agree with, good 95% of what you're saying. I don't know how there's any division at all. You say a lot of the things that I say. Politicians are narcissistic and fake, and that they, they're not people of principle, that they're practical people, and that their views and opinions can change with the wind. I think when you refer to them as a weather vane, you know, I agree with what you're saying, and that is true about Daryl Issa.
Oh yeah,
that is true.
I knew there was.
Hello?
No, I'm still here. I was just basking in my accolades. I'm sorry.
Oh, all right. All right. Well, good. Enjoy it. And I did call into Mike's show the other day, the Saturday. He double dared me to, and I showed up. However, USC football and the start of the season was a little more important, so I had to cut out. I hope nobody's particularly bothered by that.
No, I don't think anybody would be particularly bothered. Mikey's a good egg. The whole football thing, sports, is something that I've kind of dropped. My only sport that I engage in is politics.
That's a good way to have a nice, well-balanced life.
the only phone call I received outside of Ron, Linda, and John was an 865 number, which...
I wasn't calling in. I was listening. I may have called in if I found something that stoked my interest. I mean, I didn't expect to be treated fairly. So, but that's all right. I would have let you've had your heyday on me. I can be humble like that. My ego's not always involved.
Well, if it wasn't, you wouldn't be talking about yourself so much. So you just contradicted your own argument. Thank you.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Well, great. Man, I feel like I should queue up Kumbaya now. We're all in agreement.
We have that
That's
in
awesome.
The
queue up something, Ron, but dead air is bad for radio.
I agree with him. I agree with you again, Mike, 100%. I agree with you.
I don't think that I actually have Kumbaya in the repertoire, but it is not a bad song, actually.
No,
but,
I guess, no, it's a beautiful song. It's a church song.
Yeah. You know, the whole sports thing, I don't know, I just got out of the whole sports gig, and, you know, I pay attention to the markets and try and pay attention to family and keep my
right,
stuff
there you go. You
wrapped kind of
you
tight
show me
here.
That's your balance. I'm reading an interesting book.
What's that?
It's called Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins.
Oh, yeah, John Perkins. I tried to get John on my show a couple of times, but... I think he's really after a larger audience. But, great book. And really
yeah,
kind of
I've only cracked it. I haven't got to read too much. But if people were to take the time to read the book, I read the blurbs, and I kind of have an idea what he talks about. but it really gives you an idea of the corporate imperialism that's been going on for a long time. Not, it didn't start with this administration or the administration before. This is old, old stuff,
yeah.
and it's gone on, and it's nonpartisan. You know, it's about money, and he points it out. He was actually a person that that was a head economist, and he went in to different countries with the backing of the IMF and a consulting firm, and they gave these massive loans. They came in under the idea of a United Nations program of helping Peru, for instance, of building a water system or an electrical system. An infrastructure, exactly. And then
under
what would happen is they
of goodwill.
Well, they would, yeah, exactly, under excellent words. And they would get, say, $1 billion from the IMF in loans, but 90% of that money would go out to U.S. corporations. And the benefits of the water and the electrical system, it only helped the elites or the rich people in Peru, so to speak. And then at that point, they would default on the loans. And it's done over and over and over again. And it's interesting read to anybody that likes to read.
I absolutely agree with you on that. It's a fantastic book, and I know you haven't been listening to the show for a long time.
No, I got in late.
Since like 2010 or something. But I want to give you rundown, some background, and I'm not going to give their names, but of course, the NSA, they know who I'm talking about anyway. When I started down my journey of having my eyes opened. I got introduced to a group of people that were meeting at a gentleman's house here in Georgia. And it was explained to me how they came to be meeting up as a group. One of the things that I really got into studying was law. I read a lot of case law. I've got an entire collection of law books. And I was really focused on local law, state law here in Georgia, because I wanted to understand how things had progressed. Anyway, this group of people were fighting a particularly terrible group. They were actually being sued for $86.5 billion by the Federal Reserve Bank. As it turned out, they were acquaintances of a guy that owned a church in Florida who, as it happens, owned a mining company and several other companies, and he had befriended the ruler of a foreign country who had a gold mining operation that, unbeknownst to this guy from Florida, that gold mining operation was owned and operated by the Federal Reserve Bank. And this leader of this foreign country kicked their asses out and brought this guy in to run the mining operation, and the country, Liberia, got a much bigger cut. Well, you can imagine that the folks at the Federal Reserve Bank didn't like that their mining company got kicked out of this country. Well, the next thing this fella knows, he's in prison, his wife's in prison.
Wow.
They seized all of his property in Florida and in two other countries, and gee, wouldn't you know it, the head of Liberia finds himself in the midst of a coup, and he's being claimed as committing genocide.
Samuel Taylor.
Yes.
Oops, we weren't supposed to say any names.
And so this group of people here in Georgia, you know how they end up connected to this? They were all major donors to the church down in Florida. Each one of them had donated personally over $10,000 to the church. So the Fed said, well, we got this guy, and we got this guy, and we got his wife. They were missing $86.5 billion in gold. Somehow there was some gold missing that nobody could account for.
Billion with a B?
With a B. So they
That's
went after
lot.
These guys. Oh, yeah. And I've seen the paperwork. I've seen the documentation. I sat down in this guy's office, and, you know, there's 10 people meeting at this table. And when I got to admit, when this all first started, I thought they were nuts. And when I started seeing the documents and the filings, I was blown away.
Sounds like it could be a movie.
It could. So, you know, I do not underestimate anything that the people behind the government are capable of. And I've known for a long time that the government, whether it's Bush or Obama or Clinton or whomever, they're nothing but a bunch of damn puppets. And most of them are bumbling idiots on top of that.
I hear you say this, and I agree with you, and I know that it's true. I'm not just agreeing with you. You just confirm, you just have this, of the same opinion. And I'm curious as to why there's so much division and why it seems like the people on the right, it seems like their head was in the sand until Obama came in office. It seems like they weren't concerned about the same thing. You know how the right sounds now? Talking about the New World Order, the bankers, and the plutocracy. They're sounding like the left did 10 years ago.
Or like the John Birch Society.
Seriously,
seriously.
They're saying the exact same things, and there's always an underlying, even if you're aware of this, of actually who's pulling the strings, for some reason people get caught up in the political puppets.
Well, and I think that's because that's what we're supposed to do. We have been spoon-fed and indoctrinated.
But they know better.
Well, and I think that's
Sure. I hear you preach the same message, and I haven't been around long, but you've been consistent. And the message, and correct me if I'm wrong, okay, or if you're saying something different, is that it doesn't matter what party, that this is a charade, that this is a game, that these people are controlled by big money interests, and they continue to perform for big money interests, and the political stuff that goes on is kind of a sideshow as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Whomever is selected to run, and I said selected, that they're going to do the bidding of their masters.
Certainly.
Clinton's done it. Bush has done it. I don't understand why it's more egregious when Obama does it. And this is why people maybe mischaracterize a lot of the right of being racist. Okay? I'm trying to give you some understanding.
No, I get you. I feel what you're
saying. I'm trying to give the others some understanding. You know, maybe there are some racists, but maybe there aren't. But when this attention, when this concern that we're seeing from the right now, that they're afraid of government, when they weren't afraid of, where they didn't speak, where they were afraid of, you know, the administrations before, and it's the same, you're saying it's the same, it's a continuation of the same thing no matter who's in office.
It's the same corporation, we just got a different CEO. Yeah, I mean, there's no difference to me. Just like tonight, you know, coming home, I'm loath to admit it, but I was listening to Sean Hannity parroting away, and he was talking to some numbnuts, and he was talking about this legislation that Linda had mentioned earlier, that this guy's introducing legislation to repeal the War Powers Authorization Act, and Hannity's agreeing with him and say, yes, I think it's terrible, and I'm yelling at the radio going, well, Sean, you didn't freaking think so when Bush was using it, you piece of shit.
You know something, and Hannity's, and you can use that for Hannity, but you can use it just about for 85%, 90% of the people on the right.
Oh, no, I get that. But
I never heard anything against, I never heard any opposition to the war, no matter when Iraq started going bad.
Well, you did, but the only ones that got any play
when Iraq started going bad.
The only ones that ever got any play in the media was Code Pink. But if you were on, you know, if you were on alternative media, if you were on alternative sites, if you were listening to me, you damn sure heard me run down the war effort in Iraq. We had no business being in there. We should never have gone in there. You know, Afghanistan, I understand, but I think that was just a damn red herring. You know, in a way for the U.S. to go in and beat our chest and say, see, we could do it. The Soviets suck. But nonetheless, it's all a damn game. It's a big mind game. And I think part of the reason that you don't see, you know, we see all this division, I don't hear any of the same sentiments that you're talking about coming from the left.
And that's funny. It's strange how they have people caught up in these political figures and these parties.
And that's exactly what it is.
Certainly been conditioned. I can say something that I'm against, and wrong is wrong no matter who does it, because
sure.
I consider myself a principled person.
Well, you know, I told the story, and I've told it many times, and then I'll let Linda have her say because I know she's wanting to get in here. But when my wife and I were coming back from Alexandria, listening to the Patriot radio on Sirius, and I got tired of hearing all the reruns on the weekend, so I turned it over to the liberal channel just to see what they were talking about, and I started laughing. And she looked at me funny, and she said, "What's so funny?" I said, "All the commercials are the same. All the commercials were the same on both channels, whether they were pitching to the liberals or to the conservatives. They were pushing all the same commercial garbage." And I just found that funny, because that's truly the real deal. That's really what's going on. You're being sold a bill of goods on either side.
That's why I started listening to these conservative stations. I started because the other stations weren't addressing what was going on.
They were
snowing it over. They were covering it up. They were snowing it over.
I want to hear
a little bit more accurate reporting on it.
Sure. Let's let Miss Linda get in here. I know she's been waiting patiently. What's on your mind, Linda?
Well, I think one of the answers to the questions, and this, I'm just speaking for myself, but I know that from hearing from others at these meetings, when the Tea Party formed, and the reason for it, you know, to answer Beasley's query as to why they weren't screaming against Bush, but they waited until Obama got in. And I will assure you it has nothing to do with the color of the skin. It has to do with the color of the ideology, which to me is red with a gold sickle and hammer. Because when he opened his mouth and he started in 2009, he was blatant. There was no mask. You knew this guy was dyed-in-the-wool, communist, socialist, whatever. The other ones were very good at hiding it.
Communism and socialism are two different things.
Yeah, well, not according to Karl Marx, but that's just, you know, because he said the goal of socialism is
communism. And socialism have two different definitions, and I see you don't know the difference. A communist could not be a Muslim. There's a conflict there.
No.
Communism is godless.
Socialism
recognizes no God. Communism is godless, and he's also a Muslim. You guys, you really need to read some books. You really need to read some books.
I already have.
All right.
I'm
not going to do this. You don't know the difference between communism and socialism.
Well, hold on now.
Try to bring them up.
Well, wait a minute. She does. Let her explain.
Doesn't. Why don't you teach her so she does? Because she doesn't.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on. We don't have to be abrasive. I know for a fact that Linda
she's already
does.
Been abrasive to me, and she doesn't know what she's talking about. She calls me uneducated. I remember the things that she says. I don't hold a grudge, but I've got someone that doesn't know the distinction between the two words, can't appreciate the nuance, and is telling me I'm uneducated. That is amazing.
The socialism is a segue between capitalism and communism.
All right.
Yeah, it's a stepping stone.
That's your definition of socialism?
Well, that's just one of them, because I have read the dictionary. I know
right.
that that's
so what,
one
so,
definition.
So give me your best definition of socialism. Quick.
That you nationalize things, that it's very similar to, of course, what was done in Italy under Mussolini, and
that's fascism. Damn it, that's fascism. That's where the rich have complete control. You don't know shit.
Settle down.
You don't. No. I'm sorry. I don't mean to wreck your show. She doesn't know what the hell she's talking about. Fascism and socialism have nothing to do with each other. This woman hasn't seen a classroom. She's dumb as a bag of rocks, and I'm not going to interrupt your show. Have a good day. Seriously. Mussolini was a socialist? Give me a break. Mussolini was a fascist. Why don't
and
you
Hitler
look at
was
these
a
simple
socialist.
Words?
And Hitler
Come
was
on
a
now.
Socialist.
Come on now.
Stalin
these
was
are your
common.
Friends, and you don't want to offend them. But you know damn well that socialism and fascism are probably on the opposite ends of the spectrum.
A different
you know that.
Accomplishing the same goal. And I believe that's what Miss Linda
grief.
Was... Well, it is it not?
What's fascism? Fascism is ruled by the elite.
Fascism is a marriage fascism.
Whatever,
or
dude. Corporatism. Why don't you guys, here, you know what, you gotta listen to me.
It's a marriage of government and corporations, or
which makes
the
it
means
plutocracy.
Of production.
Which, yeah,
correct.
Now, is
or
socialism...
Now, how many
whatever,
times...
Dude.
How many,
you can twist it around all you want. You're afraid to call these people out when they say stupid things.
How many times have you heard me say on this very show that the current system we have is a fascist system? Well, you know that's true. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the way that we get results and we can educate one another is not to get angry and call each other names.
She and I have already had our break. There's no need to be civil.
So
she's
there
already,
might as
she's
well
already
just,
crossed the line, and
so
she doesn't
might
know
as
what
well
she's
just
talking about.
Continue it, right? Instead
we don't
of,
have to continue it. I don't have to continue it. You're right. We don't have to continue it. She's entitled to think what she wants, but fascism and socialism are not the same thing. Any 10th grade civic student can tell you that. Socialism and communism are different things by definition, and a definition of socialism, she doesn't even bother to look these things up. She just talks and she doesn't know what she's talking about. This is what I'm dealing with. That is, she needs
well,
to step her game up.
Well, I can see you're getting very agitated about it, and I just...
I'm not that agitated.
Well, you
what
are,
I'm,
and,
what
and it bothers me that you feel the need to continue.
Oh, dude. I feel the need to do what?
Come on, man. That you feel the need.
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
To belittle someone.
Oh, you know what? You know something? They have tried it with me. Mike told me to blow him the other day. You know? Mike told me to blow him. So, you know, it didn't start with me. They've been completely civil. She doesn't know what the hell she's talking about.
Well, you know, I seem to remember my mother telling
right.
me a long time ago.
Your mother doesn't
ago.
Have anything to do with this conversation. Mike told
he
me
does.
To blow
he's
him.
Wrong,
he's an uncompromising
right.
idiot. That's why his wife, Michelle, left him, because she doesn't want to have anything to do with him, because he doesn't compromise. That's why he's a lonely, bald bastard that he is now.
Wow. Very interesting end to the show, guys. Apologize for that, but sometimes, you know, the just damn it kills me that people can't seem to get along. Yes, that was very rude, and you're absolutely correct, Doc, and it's okay. And Miss Linda, I apologize for that happening. I apologized to Beasley the other night. You know, it's just vitriol, and there's no room for it. When we have disagreements, we can work out those disagreements. But the way you work out a disagreement, you know, when we're talking about why we can't have discourse, and then you pounce and act like that, well, that's unacceptable. I personally really don't care what others hold of me. I really don't have an ego in that way. And certainly, most of the people that know me know that. But at the same time, you know, and I've tried to explain to everyone that listens to the show that, you know, there are right ways and wrong ways to handle a dispute when we disagree. And that was an example of wrong way a dispute or a disagreement. In my opinion, that's not how we should handle it. And, you know, I'm glad that Beasley comes in. I'm glad that we had a lot of agreement. Sorry that he got so upset, and I don't like that confrontational, argumentative tone. I mean, if you want to debate, I'll debate you. I got no problem debating, but to just try and belittle someone is different. And, you know, Beasley, you can say you're not upset at all, but your voice and your tone belies what you're typing in my chat room. Well, you know, he hit me first. Big deal. You know, if we've truly educated, okay, so tit for tat, now we've got a quid pro quo. Is everybody all even now? Are we all even and we can be civil from now on? Or do we have to continue the rock throwing and the lobbing of insults and being jackasses? We don't need to be rude to get our point across. Am I playing favorites? Yeah, I suppose I am. I've known Linda a long time, and what you did was wrong. What she did the other day was wrong, and I had a talk with her about that, actually. Well, you know, if someone is misinformed, I see that as an opportunity to teach, a teaching opportunity, rather than an opportunity to pull out a club and beat them over the head. And if you really want change and you really want to see change in this country, then that's what we ought to be doing.